Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. President Trump says he's not considering firing special counsel Robert Mueller, at least as of last night when a reporter lobbed the question to Trump. But that question is at the center of hot debate that's gripped the administration and much of Washington in the past week. Anti-Trump text messages between two FBI officials, now off the investigation, have Republicans charging bias. This hour on Point, the FBI bias charge and the Russia investigation. You can join us on air or online. Do you have confidence that the Russia investigation is being handled properly or not? Do those FBI texts change anything for you? And if so, how? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me now from Washington is Del Quentin Wilber, Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Del, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us from Washington is Greg Miller, national security correspondent for The Washington Post. Greg, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, let me just start with the first most obvious question to both of you gentlemen. I mean, the president says, as of last night, he's not going to fire special counsel Robert Mueller. How long is that likely to last, Del?
Well, there's no telling. He's getting a lot of his lawyers, you know, Trump's lawyers are pushing him to cooperate with the Mueller investigation, although there are signs that that kind of cooperation is fraying. They've said on the record there are no signs he's going to fire him. I think a lot of this is just being stoked in the media and social media. But again, you know, the president, if you had said the president's going to fire Jim Comey in late April, I would have said no, there's no way he'd do that. It would cause a firestorm of controversy. He'd end up with a special counsel. There's no way he'd do it. And he did. And so I think, you know, making predictions about what the president is going to do, particularly this president, who, you know, often shoots from the hip and can be known for being slightly impulsive and stuff. And going from the gut is not a good bet to make.
Well, point well taken about that none of us have a crystal ball about any administration, let alone this one. But Greg, I mean, you and your colleagues at The Washington Post just wrote an enormous article sort of taking a deep dive into the evolution of the president's look at, you know, the Russia issue overall and how we got here. So, I mean, given that background, do you have confidence that the president's advisors around him are going to hold the line and Mueller's going to continue in this position for a long period of time?
I mean, I would agree with Del. I think that it's probably a daily battle inside the White House. His lawyers and advisors probably are weighing in constantly trying to push against this impulse that undoubtedly exists, right? I mean, it's easy to imagine that Trump would see this as a solution to this problem, firing Mueller. But, you know, as we wrote in the story you just referenced, there are many times over the past year where his aides have been counseling him, urging him in one direction, and they think that they've made progress. They think they've cemented something in his mind only to see it blow up.
Mm. Well, let's take a step back here and just remind folks what was in those text messages that we all began to hear about last week. Now, these are text messages that the Department of Justice released to a group of reporters, and they're from Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, former investigators on Robert Mueller's team. Now, Del, I understand that Mueller fired or took Strzok off the investigation in late July. Lisa Page had been off for apparently other reasons before that. But do we know how long Mueller himself knew about the content of these messages?
Oh, not very long. I mean, when he heard about it, he jettisoned Mr. Strzok because he just couldn't afford to have someone with so much controversy surrounding him. What's interesting about these text messages, right? They were on their work phone, work phones. This agent and the lawyer were having an affair, and so they were communicating on their work phones to avoid their spouses seeing their communication on their personal phones. And it'd be kind of like their conversations. I read every text that was released. And their conversations like two people sitting on a couch watching the conventions, right? They're like, oh, Bernie Sanders, I don't know what words I can use on the radio, so I'd be careful. But they said not very nice things about Bernie Sanders, Eric Holder, Chelsea Clinton, Trump got a lot of it. And to me, having read all those texts, it was more they weren't partisan so much.
They just hated politicians.
No, like, you know, Strzok was a conservative Democrat, he said, maybe a liberal Republican. I got that sense Lisa Page was a little liberaler, more liberal. But it was more like competence or incompetence. Like, they didn't like people who were not professionals, right? Mm-hmm. Or seemed kind of out of it. And that's where they were directed. That's the one important thing to know about it. And
well,
two,
can I just jump in here for a second?
I'm sorry.
Because, I mean, I take your point on that. I was looking at the reporting around those 300 texts, and you're right. I mean, it seems as if there's a lot of concern about, as you said, general competence of a lot of people during the campaign. But then, I mean, there are a couple of text messages from Strzok in particular, which are the ones I think Mueller's critics are honing in on. Like, you know, one where Strzok texts, "I am worried about what Trump is encouraging in our behavior, the things that make me proud of our tolerance for dissent, what makes us different from Sunnis and Shias blowing each other up is disappearing."
There's no doubt that Trump got more of the criticism from these two. There's no doubt. And that's why Strzok, who led the Hillary Clinton investigation to a private email server, is not on Mueller's team now. He was one of the top counterintelligence agents in the Bureau, one of the very top. And there are a lot of questions you got to ask about his competence, right? Like, you're going to be texting this kind of stuff on a work phone mm-hmm. to your mistress or whatever it is, and you're going to be like, that's blackmailable material. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Greg will test that CIA guys. They are told no affairs, right? Because that's how they get you, you know. And this guy had a lot of secrets. Yeah.
Well, so Greg, jump in here, because there's the issue also of, you know, many of Mueller's strongest critics right now are basically saying that he shouldn't have anybody on his team who professes publicly or whether on a work phone any kind of political opinion right now. I mean, is that even realistic at all?
I mean, I think that probably is an unrealistic standard to expect to find people who are just so pure of mind and heart that they don't even have views on things. But as Del said, to express them in this sort of way on a work communications device in this kind of context, you can see why Mueller moved as quickly as he did. I mean, one of the things that seems really striking to me about the way Mueller has conducted this investigation is just how little he has exposed or made vulnerable to this kind of criticism. I mean, this is a concerted effort on his part to operate in a very sealed environment. Nothing is sticking out, right? And so now there is this little thing sticking out, and you can see why he's approached it this way.
Right. Well, I want to play a little bit of tape here from various voices associated with this moment that we find ourselves in. First, this is Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Of course, he is the person who put Mueller in the place of the special counsel. He testified before the House Judiciary Committee last Wednesday over the capability of the FBI to oversee the Russian investigation, and he defended Robert Mueller and other agents on the case.
I think it would be very difficult, Congressman, for anybody to find somebody better qualified for this job. Director Mueller has, throughout his lifetime, been a dedicated and respected and heroic public servant.
On the other hand, here's Republican Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio pressing Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein back and pressing hard.
This is unbelievable. And I'm here to tell you, Mr. Rosenstein, I think the public trust in this whole thing is gone. So it seems to me you got two things you can do. You're the guy in charge. You're the guy who picked Mueller. You're the guy who wrote the memo saying why he needed to fire Comey. You're the guy in charge. You could disband the Mueller special prosecutor and you can do what we've all called for. Appoint a second special counsel to look into this.
So, Del, let me ask you about this. I mean, I think that one of the reasons why folks like Jim Jordan's argument holds a lot of water with many people is there's one text in particular that is just raises more questions than anything, and that's from August 15th, 2016, where Strzok writes, "I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's," and that would be FBI Washington Field Office Director Andrew McCabe, "in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in an unlikely event that you die before you're 40. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, they were in the deputy director, the number two FBI agent in the whole bureau, who has taken a lot of heat from Trump himself, even though Mr. McCabe is a civil servant. he's not a political appointee, and Mr. Trump would clearly like him gone because Mr. McCabe's wife ran for, you know, House or state rep in Virginia 2, 3, 4 years ago or something and got some money from McAuliffe, a guy close to the Clintons. And that's been a big controversy about that. I mean, all these texts, doesn't look good. You know, I mean, like these, not only were they criticizing Trump, they were alluding to the Washington Post had a really good report the other day explaining another one of these texts where Lisa Page was telling Peter Strzok, hey, let's say something about the untraceable phone that we're using to talk about Hillary on. And I want to see that phone. I want to get the access to what they wrote about Hillary on that phone. And it turns out that Lisa Page was telling Peter Strzok, hey, this is what you tell your wife when she sees you texting. Just say, hey, we're on the untraceable Hillary phone to talk about work.
Hmm.
You know, and so like when you get these layers of complicated things here, it's difficult. I mean, this is in some ways, I wonder if this is kind of a war. Like the people who are criticizing the most are many of them are highly partisan or they're big Trump allies. And if this was on the left, if there was an analogous situation, the left would have its attack dogs too.
Right. Right?
And because they view life through a partisan lens, whereas FBI agents generally and prosecutors that I know view life through a professional lens, like they're partisan, they have their beliefs, but they are professionals and they carry through regardless of those
right.
issues. And so I think there's a war between those two.
So, Greg, we've just got about 30 seconds here before the break, but I want to ask you, when Jim Jordan says to Rosenstein that he thinks public trust in this whole thing is gone, is he right?
I don't think that's true at all. I don't think there's any polling that suggests that's the case. I think that's a talking point that opponents of this investigation are using.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we are talking this hour about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation and Republican concerns or charges that it could be biased against President Trump. You can join the conversation. Do you want Robert Mueller fired, or do you have confidence in his investigation into Russia and the Trump campaign? Are you worried that the president could fire Robert Mueller? We've actually also got some comments here coming in already from Twitter, actually. We have Hello Kitty saying, surprise, federal workers have their own political opinions, too, and often discuss them with their colleagues. On the On Point website, Honest Debate is saying, the FBI getting dragged into politics? No, the FBI, actually the entire DOJ went there, drained the swamp. On the other hand, Krieger says, are we also pulling anyone off the case who has praised Trump? Bias is bias. We're joined by Adele Quentin Wilbur. He's Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and by Greg Miller, national security correspondent for The Washington Post. And gentlemen, I just want to play you some more tape here because the rhetoric seems to be amping up with each passing day. Here's Kellyanne Conway on Fox News on Saturday. She's White House senior advisor, and she's saying that the FBI investigation into the Trump campaign's alleged ties with Russia was unfairly stacked against the president, as the text between, she says, the two FBI officials show.
The fix was in against Donald Trump from the beginning, and they were pro-Hillary. We understand people have political views, but they are expressing theirs with such animus and venom towards the now president of the United States, they can't possibly be seen as objective or transparent or even-handed or fair.
Now, this was the interview in which underneath Conway, Fox News had put a banner asking, a coup in America. On the other hand, here's Representative Gerald Nadler of New York, top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, pushing back on President Trump's threats to FBI investigators, or pushing back against the president, I should say, in a hearing on Wednesday.
The president's call for an investigation of the investigation is at best wildly dangerous to our democratic institutions. On the one hand, the president's old lock her up cheer seems quaint after a couple of guilty pleas by Trump associates.
Del Quentin Wilbur, let me ask you this. I mean, I feel like in the long run, it's worth exploring what effect this amped up rhetoric, these concerns, and how they're interpreted by the American people have on the confidence that they have with the FBI. I mean, could this be damaging in the long run?
Well, of course it could. Yeah. It could absolutely be damaging. But there are analogous situations in our history, too. I mean, the Democrats and the White House, you know, really attacked Ken Starr and his investigators for the same thing. And when his report came out, he didn't have the same gravitas as you would have expected for someone of his stature with his investigators when they came out with the Starr report. So, you know, this is nothing new. It's just that I think in today's age of constant media attention, Fox News 24/7, CNN 24/7, and the, you know, the Twitterverse or whatever it is, it's like it's all in your face all the time. And so to get attention, you have to amp it up even more.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with your question, though.
Well, so, I mean, I hear you when you say it's nothing new. But, Greg, to that point, I mean, the president and his administration have shown over the past year, a predisposition towards attacking institutions especially the president himself feels are undermining him, right? I mean, he was highly critical of the CIA, likening them to Nazi Germany. He was highly critical of the federal judiciary. I mean, there's a pattern here of an attempt to undermine the integrity and authority of other branches of government, is there not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the point I was going to make, is that this is part – the attacks on the Bureau and on Mueller in this case are just part of a much broader assault that is ongoing against all kinds of institutions, including ours, including the media. And this to me is, you know, I wonder what the legacy will be for this administration in terms of how much damage these attacks end up causing. I mean, these are efforts to undermine institutions that we count on for democracy to function in the United States. And the purpose is to protect the president, to elevate the president, to protect him. They often flow out of his insecurities. But you're right. He's gone after the CIA, intelligence agencies, Congress. He has gone after election commissions. He's gone after the media on an ongoing basis. And I just sort of wonder, do we come out of this era and see it as a singular moment and recover our equilibrium, or what we used to think of as our equilibrium? Or is there a permanent damage that accrues?
Okay. So, but on the other hand, though, Greg, I wonder, I mean, we've got, I'm just thinking of Honest Debate's tweet about the FBI getting dragged into politics. No, the FBI went there, drained the swamp. I mean, I just wonder if there is any credence to that. How is it that Robert Mueller now, if at all, can demonstrate that he's got, a team of people who, I don't know, regardless of their political opinions, are conducting themselves in a professional and unbiased manner? Because, you know, as Del was saying earlier, that the FBI does have a history of intersecting with politics frequently over U.S. history.
I mean, it's not just the FBI. I mean, we saw, you know, Trump's – one of his first moves as president was to travel to the CIA. He speaks before an audience of agency people who applauds his remarks. And there were questions at the time, who are these agency people who seem to be so supportive of this president that they're applauding? And they were sort of a self-selected group. The agency had sent out an invitation to the entire workforce. You know, the first 500 people who respond who really want to see Trump speak in our lobby get these tickets. So, I mean, of course there are people who work at CIA and at FBI and every agency in Washington who have political views. They are supposed to, as we are in the media, they are supposed to suppress them to some degree as they go about their jobs.
We're talking about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation and charges of bias. We're joined by Del Quentin Wilbur, Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and Greg Miller, national security correspondent for The Washington Post. Let's go to Bart, who's calling from Norman, Oklahoma. You're on the air, Bart.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for having me on air. I just wanted to comment that if you repeat something enough times in a row, over and over again, it can take on the semblance of truth. And that's something that the Trump administration and some of the more alternative conservative media outlets have been trying to do over and over again with this investigation from its onset, even before the appointment of special counsel. And I think that even now, with what has recently happened, it still is not going to be enough for the Trump administration to come out and try to verbally discredit this with the number of officials on his side that have pled guilty and with his continual rhetoric of attacking everybody that doesn't see 100% eye to eye with
right.
him. And so it's just another situation where it's going to drum up support from his base.
Bart, looks like we lost your line there, but I take your point. Del, respond to that, because I think Bart's making a good point about rhetoric setting the stage, whether it be for speaking directly to Trump's base, as in his voters, or perhaps more importantly to members of Congress. I mean, it has that been effective here?
I don't know if it's been effective. I think that Greg got me thinking about a really interesting point in your question, too, is that do we even remember, like, when he went, didn't he call, Greg may know this, didn't Trump, like, call the CIA and members that, like, Nazis or make an analogy to them being Nazis or something? And, like, I'd already forgotten he'd done that.
Well, yeah,
this guy
the
throws
tweet,
up so much.
I've got his tweet in front of me. So this was January 11th, 2017. Yeah. The president tweeted, intelligence agencies should never have allowed this fake news to leak into the public. One last shot at me. Are we living in Nazi Germany? That's what he said. Yeah,
exactly. And so, like, he says all these outlandish things a lot, and he makes attacks, and he likes doing that and creating chaos. And he repeats this, him and his allies repeat the same stuff over and over again, like your caller was suggesting. But there's so much of it, I can't remember all of it. So here we are talking about the FBI, and then Greg's like, well, this is not unique. He did this all these other places. And you're like, oh, my God. You know, it's hard to keep track of it all.
Mm. Well, I guess what I'm wondering is, as it piles up and up, and I mean, we played a little tape earlier from Republican congressmen asking for an investigation of the investigation. Is the president and the administration, could they be setting the stage for very little pushback from Republicans if indeed he does decide to take the next step and attempt to fire Robert Mueller?
Of course. I think any of that could happen. I think part of it is that he's not going to fire Mueller. They're just sowing the seeds to make whatever Mueller does look biased, right? So they have that winning talking point. Or they're setting the stage to perhaps get rid of Mueller. Or I think it's a better playing field for them to make the investigation slightly discredited. I think in the end, like I'd be nervous if I were the White House, because the lawyers really do believe, his lawyers really do believe, and they've said this, that they think Mueller will clear Trump of collusion, the main thing everyone's investigating. Well, if they're going to do that and you've discredited the investigation, I mean, I don't think it's going to bother Mr. Trump. I think the president's going to go out and trumpet if he's cleared, no matter what, if he'd spent all this time discrediting it. But I would wonder if that would undermine that somewhat. Like, I don't know. It's a complicated thing. We're in uncharted territory.
That we can all agree on for sure. Let's go take another call here. Charlie is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is really, it seems that there is a politicalization on both sides. Lois Lerner obviously broke the law with the IRS, yet she is free and not in jail. Huma Abedin, as well as Mills, broke the law, lied to Congress. They were given immunity, and they also are free. But then you have General Flynn, who is a five-star general, did probably nothing major wrong compared to the other people, yet he's having to go to prison. It seems that there is an inequality that is affecting people, and that is why there's this passion about what's going on.
There's a lot to unpack there. I mean, some of what the caller just said is just not accurate. Flynn is not a five-star general. He's already pled guilty to lying to the FBI, which I think many people do think is a serious crime. There's a wide belief that the Mueller investigation has a great deal more evidence that could be used against Flynn if his cooperation isn't sufficient. And, you know, that lie that he has admitted to, that he has pleaded guilty to, is a consequential one. He is lying to his government, to the United States government, about his communications with the Russian government. I just don't think it's okay to dismiss that.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Let's get another call in here. Kathleen is calling from Manchester, Georgia. You're on the air, Kathleen.
Hi, Meghna. I appreciate you taking the call. I think that every time the investigation gets close to important issues in this investigation, it seems that there's always a distraction brought up in regards to detouring to other individuals or subjects like the Clinton emails. I mean, it seems like every time Mueller gets close to something, there's just too many directions. Everybody, it seems like the Trump is trying to get everybody in other directions to take them off of the main issues that are at hand.
Yeah. Kathleen, I take your point. Thank you so much for calling. Del, let me just ask you about that. It does seem as if, I mean, a lot of people see this as a distraction from other major issues in Washington. But, I mean, how important is the fact that there is so much dispute amongst key players about the integrity of the Mueller investigation?
You know, I feel like the caller I felt like was addressing a question of, every time they get somewhere with Mueller, there are distractions that come up and they're trying to deflect. And I think that's completely accurate. I think it's probably on their part, in their minds, a smart press strategy, a smart communication strategy. And I don't think the Mueller investigation is a distraction. I think it's examining some really important questions. But again, we don't know how it's going to turn out. And, you know, he needs to get the job done. And by all, echoing a comment Greg made just a little while ago, it's like we don't really know much about what Mueller is doing, right? Like, it's a black box, and they've not leaked basically anything, if anything at all. And we don't really know what he has. I mean, we know about Manafort, who was indicted. We know Flynn pled guilty. We have Papadopoulos. But a lot remains unknown.
Yeah.
And it's for that reason, I think, that there's a lot of this building and building. We don't know.
Well,
you know.
So I just want to say thank you for the clarification on what the caller said. You're right in your interpretation of what she said. I misspoke when I turned the question back to you. So I appreciate your keen listening here. But in terms of we don't know what Mueller knows, absolutely true. But in the midst of all this, we had that recent reporting from a couple of days ago that Mueller has tens of thousands of Trump transition emails. And there's a huge controversy over that, too. But, is it possible that part of this, I mean, I don't know. I who can play the politics game in Washington? But, Greg, is it possible that this firestorm over the text may have come in anticipation of us finding out that Mueller does have these transition emails, which, you know, could include emails of Jared Kushner as well?
Yeah, as Del said, it's just really impossible to know. I mean, they have done such an effective job at sealing off this investigation and exercising amazing discipline, actually, compared to how most of Washington functions, which leaks come from all directions. I think Del is correct here that this one has this entity, the Mueller investigation, has managed to keep almost all of its cards hidden.
Mm. We've got just about a minute to go before the break. And you know, I want to repeat a question that I think I probably asked earlier. And if I didn't, shame on me, I should just ask it. What's really at stake here? I mean, for these text messages, maybe they're a distraction, maybe they're not. But for as long as there's ongoing questions about the integrity of this investigation, Greg, we got 30 seconds before the break here, but what's at stake?
I mean, I think that There's a small percentage of the population for whom this investigation is already discredited. Whatever Mueller comes up with, they will disregard. But I think ultimately it will come down to the case that he makes in the end and how convincing that is to the public and the Congress.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Russia investigation, the FBI, and Special Counsel Robert Mueller. You can join the conversation. Where do you think the investigation is going to go? We're joined today by Greg Miller, National Security Correspondent for The Washington Post, and by Del Quentin Wilbur, Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal. I just want to play a little bit of tape here from none other than Russian President Vladimir Putin, who disparaged the FBI-Russia investigation during his end-of-the-year press conference last Thursday. Putin claimed it's a calculated move by the president's opponents to, quote, inflict damage on the country's domestic political situation.
This is all dreamed up by people who are in opposition to Trump to make sure that everyone thinks that what he's doing and working at is illegitimate. It's just delirium. It's madness.
So, Del, with that in mind, I wanted to ask you the same question that I ended the last segment with asking Greg by it. Like, tell us really what is at stake here with this firestorm, this current firestorm over the investigation?
Well, I think, it was an effort. It's an effort to kind of discredit or raise serious questions. And some people legitimately have legitimate serious questions. These texts were not good about the investigation. And, you know, it's an effort to kind of, to blunt it. And that's what's at stake. And I think a certain part of the population, as Greg said, has made up its mind already. And it's going to be interesting to see what comes out, if anything comes out. Like everyone, a lot of people on the left are cheering for Mueller to come up with some big bombshell, right? And they're cheering, actively cheering for this. And it's like, that's not Mueller's job. You know, Mueller is a pretty straight shooter from what I've been told. I have a reporter friend who went up to Mueller when he was in the, he was a homicide prosecutor. And he went up to Mueller and said, hey, homicide prosecutor Mueller, can I get a, I need to know some information about this case. And he just looked down for a minute and said, well, at least can you spell your name for me? And he spelled his name. And Mueller said, that's all I'm going to give you. You know, this is a guy who's tight-lipped, straight shooter, and we don't know what he has, and it could be nothing, it could be something, and you know, he's not going to shade it. There's no one I've met who thinks he's going to shade anything. So that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But a certain set of the population is going to be against whatever he does, no matter what, because that's the world we live in now.
So. Well, let's take another call here. Larry is calling from Grosse Pointe, Michigan. You're on the air, Larry.
Oh, great, thanks. I just want to say that with all due respect, I think the fact that this is even a serious issue that is being debated is evidence of the ultra right wing's success in weaving a completely phony issue out of whole cloth here. This is a venerated, decorated person that when he was appointed, everyone agreed there could be no better person to lead this investigation. And the fact now that a couple of employees have generated a couple of emails that they were promptly terminated for, and they thought was a private communication. Let's compare that to a president who spews venom and lies constantly. And I just think really the whole thing is evidence that there is something very serious that he knows that that Mueller has, and he's starting his campaign now to try to blunt the effect of the charges that he knows are coming.
Larry, thank you so much for your call. And just a tiny little fact that I checked there, it wasn't emails, it was text messages. And 300 of them were, 300 plus were shared with certain members of the media, but there may be thousands of them. But I take your point, Larry. Thank you so much. Let's go to another Larry who's calling from Woolwich, Maine. You're on the air, Larry.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I used to be an avid listener, but I've kind of backed off because of all of the current events. And my wife and I, when we're watching TV, we're looking at all this stuff and we kind of laugh. It's almost like watching the Jerry Springer show, you know, every single day. So we've kind of shied away from the media and, the NPR stations. But with regard to this investigation, these things have always occurred in our government. The president that we have now is somewhat vocal and maybe not as adept at explaining things as previous presidents were, but I believe these things have always happened, and politics and money seem to be what dictate the outcome.
Well, Larry, can I just jump in here? I'm just curious, when you say these things have always happened, specifically what?
Well, there's always been crimes committed in the government. People break the rules, but they're never held accountable. I mean, look at all the sexual misconduct that's been taking place, and we're just now learning of the payouts that the taxpayers have to make because of politicians' mistakes.
Well, Larry, but to that point, I mean, if accountability is what you're asking about, isn't the very existence of the special counsel's investigation evidence of an attempt towards some kind of at least understanding if people should be held accountable?
I agree in theory, but it is not. It does not work. I don't believe it ever has worked in politics in America.
Right. Larry, I'm going to take it back from you there because I really appreciate your perspective, and I want to turn it back to Greg Miller there. You know, because Greg, earlier we were talking about, you know, perhaps aspects of the moment we find ourselves in aren't the first. You know, Larry takes it a step further and says it's kind of part and parcel of American government. What do you make of the fact that there are folks out there who feel that way?
I mean, I think that's a legitimate point of view. I understand where that caller is coming from. I would disagree in some regards. I think that we're at a moment that looks a lot different than anything I can remember living through. And you know, at the start of this program, we talked about this story that we published in the Washington Post last week, which was really to try to take a comprehensive look at Trump's policies and views regarding Russia, the entire entanglement of his administration with Russia. And there's a line in the story that talks about that in some ways what we're in is an unprecedented situation where the president of the United States, because of his personal insecurities, has failed across the board to do anything to deal with the interference in the 2016 election by a major American adversary. I mean, I think it's too easy to just sort of lump this in with the corruption and sort of routine dysfunction in Washington. I think that in contrast to that, we're in a moment now that is unlike other moments we've been through.
Well, so let's just talk about that for another minute, if we can, Greg, because in your story, a GOP strategist told you, quote, to him, meaning to the president, it's all about him. He judges everything as about him. So that I guess the implication there that it's impossible for the president to see the Mueller investigation as one into potential collusion between Russia and the campaign, but rather as a personal affront, a personal investigation into him, his action and actions and his legitimacy, the legitimacy of his win.
Right, and where his self-preservation is the main objective. I mean, presidents are supposed to we look to our presidents to put country first, and in this case, you know, Trump really struggles or seems to struggle to do that. His self-preservation surrounding this investigation leads him to constantly undermine or seek to discredit the entire institution of the Department of Justice and the FBI, claiming that it is in tatters. And he does this across the board. And so it's, you know, the intelligence agencies briefed Trump 2 weeks before he came into office, laid everything on the table. These are the most highly classified evidence that we have that shows clearly that Russia interfered in the election. And he refuses to believe it, mainly out of personal insecurity.
Well, let's take another call here. Susan is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I'm a tiny little blue dot in a sea of red here. Most of my long-term friends, all baby boomers, voted for Trump. We've agreed not to discuss politics, so they're not listening to this, obviously. My question is, if Trump does decide to fire Mueller, does that mean the whole operation will be shut down? Or have they made arrangements? You may not know this. Have they made arrangements for the investigation to continue with someone else? And that's all I really needed to know.
Susan, it's actually an excellent question. I'll turn that back to Dell. He's the Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal. I mean, what would happen if the president decided to fire Mueller?
Well, I would say that I was last night Mueller's a special counsel under Justice Department regulations that were written in the late 90s, and they kind of took the place of the independent counsel. Remember the independent counsel laws? The independent counsel would go on forever on these long fishing expeditions. They never end. They were like they were appointed by judges and they reported to Congress and they were outside the normal scope of business. So the Justice Department created regulations to create a special counsel if the attorney general or acting attorney general or deputy attorney general decided that, hey, there's a criminal predicate that we can start an investigation, but having Justice Department do it, it's a conflict of interest. So we need a special counsel. Well, you know, the only way to fire him would be – I mean, Trump could theoretically fire him by, you know, firing Rosenstein and then firing him, or just firing – ripping up the regulation and firing him. He has that power right. as a president. And so it's totally possible. But the reason they kind of wrote it the way it did – they did. Neil Katyal, one of the guys who wrote it, was on Twitter the other night explaining is that they never envisioned that the president would ever want to fire a special counsel, because the last time a president did that in 1973, mm-hmm. there was a Saturday Night Massacre where they got rid of Elliot Richardson – William Ruckelhaus, the deputy attorney general, they both resigned rather than fire the special counsel Archibald Cox, and they whacked Cox, you know. So they and that was a massive historical blunder on Nixon's part, and 18 months later he's gone. And so they all figured that. But they were in uncharted times. I have no idea. But there is some – there have been stories out there that Mueller has been working with the state attorney general in New York, where they may be able to shuffle off some of the work, I guess, to prosecute something. Because, you know, the president can't pardon anyone for a state crime, only right. federal crime. So right. there's that possibility, but who knows?
Who knows?
I'm sorry. I know the answer is very unsatisfying, but it's...
But it's the truth. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Gentlemen, I want to play one more piece of tape for you, and it's one that's been chewed over a lot in the past couple of days, but I want to get your views on it. This is from last Wednesday, and it's from Fox News on Hannity, and Fox News analyst Greg Jarrett compared the Mueller investigation to the KGB.
I think we now know that the Mueller investigation is illegitimate and corrupt. And Mueller has been using the FBI as a political weapon. And the FBI has become America's secret police. Secret surveillance, wiretapping, intimidation, harassment, and threats. It's like the old KGB that comes for you in the dark of the night.
Now, Greg, no matter what one thinks about this particular moment with the Mueller investigation or the FBI or the politicization of the FBI, that is an astonishing thing for anybody to say. In 2017 America. I mean, I guess I keep coming back to, given that Dell's absolutely right, there's so much we don't know now and there's so much we don't know about what could happen. But I keep coming back to the long-term effects of the rhetoric that we're hearing now. It seems as if there's an attack on the very professional nature of any investigation. I mean, can people have confidence in any investigation that Washington undertakes in the future when this is the kind of language that's being bandied about now?
I mean, I think that we can as a country. I think that we've come out of times of acute conflict in this country in the past where there were really fundamental questions about our institutions in the 70s and Watergate and Vietnam come to mind. And it's possible as a country to heal and recover from that. But I'm with you. I mean, I just feel like the we're at a moment now where the politics is put ahead of the protection of these fundamental institutions of our democracy. It matters to this country. I'm not sure everybody appreciates the degree to which this is true, but it matters that we have a professional Federal Bureau of Investigation and Justice Department that does its best, may not ever be perfect, but does its best to avoid operating out of political direction. And the same thing with intelligence services. It's important to believe in these institutions. And so all of this language, some of it just outlandish, there is this accumulating damage to the reputations of these. And I, too, wonder what that means in the long term.
I mean, it makes me think of
these.
You
could have transported him back in time to the early 70s, 1960s, and put him on whatever the MSNBC equivalent was back then. Right. And had a liberal viewpoint, trashing because of the countering poll, spying on anti-war protesters, what they did to Martin Luther King, the FBI. Under Hoover, that place was not a professional – was professional, but there were a lot of issues, and they did a lot of political spying and had black bag jobs and all those things. So now it's much more professional. The whole bureaucracy is much more professional. They have many, many more checks and balances to ensure things don't come out that way. And it's and don't forget that Trump, one of Trump's keen advisors ever was Roy Cohn, who was a big advisor to Richard Nixon over the years ago. So that's we're in a circle and a cycle or something. And I'm with Greg hoping that, you know, maybe we come out of this with even stronger institutions. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, Greg and Del, we've just got a minute and a half left here. again, I just, you know, I know none of us have a crystal ball, but, you know, care to tell us where you'll be looking or the voices in particular that you're going to be listening for in the next couple of days as things evolve, Greg?
Over the next couple of days is way too short a horizon for me. I mean, I think it's going to take a much, much longer than that for us to really understand what happened here and what it's going to mean for all of us in terms of the broad arc of the investigation into Trump, his connections to Russia, whether there was collusion, whether he sought to defeat justice.
Yeah. And Del, same question to you.
Oh, I agree with everything Greg just said. 100%. Sorry, I don't mean to punt. It was more eloquent than I'm going to put it. So.
All right. Well, Del Quentin Wilber, Department of Justice reporter for The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Greg Miller, national security correspondent for The Washington Post. Greg, it's always great to hear you. Thank you so much as well.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And thank you to all the callers who called in who I couldn't get to. There is a great amount of passion and opinion about this. So, again, go ahead and head over to the website, onpointradio.org, and send us your thoughts there. Coming up tomorrow, the White House unveils its new national security policy, superpower rivalries, and more muscular American posture on the global stage. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.